Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
Fried fam, if you've been giving everything you've got to your work and are running on fumes, you're not alone. Burnout isn't a failing. It's your nervous system stuck in survival mode, and you can't sustain your energy from that place. That's why we've created Unfried, a 5-month group coaching program that helps mission-driven high achievers like yourself rebuild safety, calm their nervous system, and recover in a way that lasts. When you heal, you don't just get your energy back, you get your mission back. We've got 2 groups of 6 starting October 7th and 8th. Apply now and secure your spot at katedonovan.com/unfried.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled. And we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
Hi, Fried fam. It's Sarah. And I'm back with this new thing that we're trying, which is real coaching in real time on the podcast. So I'll be guiding someone through a challenge that is happening in their burnout recovery, and you'll get to listen in. Why are we doing this? Because we see it as a win-win-win. The person being coached gets support. You get to learn through their experience. And I get to show you what I do best, which is coaching, facilitating, space holding, without sort of the cringe of traditional marketing, which is a little harder for me. So in this process, I trust that you will see that vulnerability is strength, that help is available, and that change is possible one step at a time. And if this resonates, what you hear today resonates with you, please share this episode with a friend and leave us a review. Your engagement, your feedback helps us reach more people and helps more people get out of burnout. And we all want that, right? That's how we end burnout culture for all of us. So let's get into it. Today, we are talking to Kate. Welcome to Fried, Kate.
Hi, hello. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you. Thank you so much for sharing today. So that said, tell us about this loop that you're stuck in. Give us some circumstances, some backstory.
Yeah, sure. So I would say I burnt out about 2 years ago. So 2 years ago was when I crashed, basically. But it all started, let's say, 3 years ago when I started. I moved abroad because I got a new job. And then after a few months where everything seemed fine, but I started getting different symptoms. Like I got bronchitis and then it just didn't get better. And it was a little better, but not really. And, you know, going to doctors and everything seems fine. And then I got COVID and sinus infection and like cold after cold. And during that period, I started discovering I didn't realize it at first, but like I didn't want to believe also, you know, that my body is telling me something. But I started discovering that it might be the problem at work because it was kind of a toxic environment. Yeah. So then after a year of like different symptoms and just not feeling okay physically, because, you know, mentally I felt fine. I was doing therapy. I've been doing therapy for like 5 years now, you know? So I think I just thought mentally I'm fine, which means I'm fine, you know? I'm just like somehow not getting healthy. Yeah, but then after about a year of that, I got a super easy task to do. And then I got a panic attack. And at that point, I was like, okay, I think like this is not okay. This is enough is enough. And I went on sick leave. And then I kind of crashed where the exhaustion came and like, yeah, really low energy also. And kind of all the puzzle kind of came together. And I was like, oh, okay, I think I burnt out. And since then, it feels like a transformation is happening. So it's like, it feels like it's every part of my life. So one aspect is physical, where I'm still not okay. Like I still have pains and like headaches, and my lungs are sometimes still acting up while everything seems to be okay. But also, you know, through that, I went through a lot of like different things. So I moved back home, which in itself was a big thing for me because it felt a little bit like a failure because, you know, I am a perfectionist and high achiever and all that. And I feel like I don't want to do anymore what I did. So I worked in marketing before and still, like, obviously now I came back and I have 10 plus years of experience. And obviously people are calling me to do projects in that area, but I feel like I want something new and I'm still not also clear on what to do. So yeah, it feels like so many changes. And recently it feels like I'm just like in a loop, like I wrote when I applied for this, and I don't like, and it feels like I've tried so many things, you know. I've done nervous system regulation stuff, vagus nerve, and trying to find something new, but that didn't work out. So, you know, through this process of, I don't know, trying to change things, but somehow it seems like nothing is really working. So then I'm losing trust in myself and my intuition, and, you know, and then like constantly it feels like I'm trying and always going back, like, fortunately not totally back where I would, you know, feel also exhausted. And I think that exhaustion and not feeling having energy was the worst part for me. But I just feel like I'm not okay, you know, and I feel like I'm still like, yeah, and I don't know what the next step could be to like finally starting to feel like I'm getting somewhere, because I haven't felt happy, content with my life in some time, and that's like a really bad, like, it's not a pleasant feeling, right, when you just constantly feel nothing is working. So yeah, that's where I am at the moment. And really, yeah, I'm looking like for just this one or two things that I could maybe start doing that would help.
Okay, I hear you. So you're feeling stuck.
Yeah.
In that you've tried a variety of things. And is it that you feel better temporarily, or that it doesn't seem to work at all?
It depends. Like physical things in especially like nervous system regulation, I'd feel it helps. And then I sometimes fall into that, you know, you feel better and then you stop because you feel better. It's like, I think a lot of people, you know, we all start meditating, and then after a month or two, because we feel better, you just kind of, you fall out of it. Yeah. And then, yeah. So I'm also thinking, you know, am I just not persistent enough with some things? And then the self-compassion comes in, of course. Because, you know, I'm not. So I'm really harsh to myself. I know that. So yeah, some things are working and then some things are just not. And then I'm also sometimes afraid now to start something, you know, because I rather do nothing and then do something, and then that's not the right way. And then I potentially feel worse again. So yeah.
You're losing hope in the trial and error process.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Would you say that your capacity has increased since you fully burnt out, like in the peak of your burnout?
Capacity for?
Like energy? Has your energy increased? your capacity to work or your capacity to just have day-to-day function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So physically, you have improved in that way. It's interesting because at first you were saying like mentally you felt good and it was your physical body that crashed. Now your physical body is maybe feeling a bit better and it's more mental and emotional that you're struggling with.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you been aiming to practice self-compassion, even if you feel like you're not, like maybe you're not practicing it most of the time?
I tried, but it's so hard that I don't believe myself. It's like this. Mm-hmm. I think there is one part of me, and I haven't been able to really name it. I guess I don't know if it's like an inner critic or something. It's this voice that when I try to, it feels fake to be self-compassionate somehow.
Mm. Yes, it does feel fake at first because it's been so long with self-judgment as the primary inner dialogue. Did you hear my episode recently where I talked about how your brain is a lying a-hole?
Yeah, I did.
How did that land for you? Do you agree?
It depends on how I feel, I guess. Sometimes, honestly, I don't, you know, because like that other voice is stronger. Like that a-hole is saying, no, I'm not an a-hole. That's just the truth.
Oh, there it is. Right. Yeah. So you're believing it.
Yeah.
You're not saying, what is this ridiculousness? I'm not lazy. It's okay to rest. Like, so what is your inner critic saying to you? What is that mean voice, the judgmental voice saying to you specifically when you try to be compassionate, besides you're being fake?
It depends on the situation or like, you know, the thing that I'm thinking about. So if it's like career, then it's like, you're never gonna find the thing you really like, you would really like to do and work in. Or it says, you'll never get better. Yeah, just you're just not that person who will get better and who will achieve things and, you know, come to the, like, have the goals achieved and everything.
Does that voice sound like anybody you know, any people in your life? Anybody you've known in your past?
Yeah, maybe my dad, but on steroids. Yeah. And it, because with him, it wasn't, you're not going to make it. It's just like, I guess, you know, only the best is good enough. It was like that. So only straight A's is good enough.
Okay. Yeah. So that stoked the perfectionism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you also identify as a people pleaser?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's also one of the reasons that I'm afraid to try new things, because then I just think, you know, I'm going to get myself into a situation where I will potentially have to say no or like, sorry, I actually don't like this. And that's super hard for me. I'm working on it, but it's still like, I don't know, maybe I just also expectations, you know, I thought it would be easier sooner, but it's been years of me kind of trying and it's still super hard.
Right.
And then I just don't do it, right? I just stay kind of in this.
Right. Makes sense that you're stuck in the loop because you're afraid that you'll have to stand up for yourself and say no at some point. Stand up to a authority figure, whether, you know, in your past it was your dad, and then the present it would, or the future it maybe would be a boss or someone that you deem to be more important than you.
Yeah.
This is what I feel like, tell me if this resonates, but I feel like the crux of this is not believing you like are important enough or worthy enough of doing whatever it takes to have your own back, to get your needs met, to believe that you deserve the job you want, the life you want.
I don't know. To some extent, probably yes. Because on the other side, I really want it. Like the bigger part of me really want, like really, you know, wishes to achieve. And like, yeah, those things So yeah, maybe sometimes when it gets like that, this voice, when it gets really loud, then yeah. But then there are also times when I'm like, no, I do deserve, you know, things like that are good.
So it's a little bit of a battle, internal battle.
Yes,
these different voices or different parts of you are like, yeah, I want this. And this one's like, yeah, but you'll never get it. So why try? And like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's work through a specific scenario or a specific sort of goal or path that you're like wanting to take, just so we can narrow in on one thing rather than talk about it amorphously.
Mm-hmm.
So which thing in your life do you want to aim to get some clarity around in a next step?
I think career is the one that is bothering me the most at the moment. Where
and you said you want to switch careers. Is that what you... I think you said you're not sure which direction you want to go. Or are you? Like, if you really get honest with yourself, are you clear about which path, new path you want to take?
Yeah, I think so. So I used to work more in journalism before, like in my student days, and radio and stuff. So, and I always felt good doing that. So I thought that might be one of the options that feels kind of good. But then there are moments where it's like, for some reason, and again, like I can't really pinpoint it, where it's like, nah, or it's like this inner critic or like this inner part of me again, who just says like, nah, no, I don't think that's it. And then I'm not sure, like, should I trust it or not? But like, if we say one direction, that would be it. So go back more into the journalism, especially like audio stuff, podcasts and stuff like that, for example.
What do you love about that? Or what's exciting or interesting? What lights you up? What lights you up about it?
I get excited about stories that I could share and just also doing the work of it. I don't really know how to even explain it. It's just like, how I remember it, because I haven't done it in 10 plus years, but how it felt while I was doing it was just like, yeah, I like to do this, you know, just that's really like, yeah, that was the only like, or, you know, when the time just passes super quickly while you're in it. Yeah.
So when you were in it, were you the person telling stories?
Yeah.
So you like telling stories with your own voice?
Yeah, but also telling stories by, for example, interviewing people, you know, or making journalistic pieces, or yeah, I guess you call it like this in English. Yeah. Also telling stories of others, or, you know, as like that as well. Yeah.
Great. So that sounds like the core of it. And where your brain goes is journalism, podcasting, radio is one way I can do that.
Yeah. Because also I think just the medium of audio is what I like about it. So it, you know, it's not just like any kind of journalism. It's really that creating with my voice, I guess, expressing through my voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hear it just in the way you talk about it, it does light you up a bit. And also like, okay, there's confidence. You're like, you're not questioning, am I good at telling stories? Am I good at interviewing? You're just like, that part is solid. Or more solid than maybe the other parts. Because I'm sure that voice says a little something about it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So what's stopping you from looking for that job? That would allow you to do that.
One thing that I tried once and it didn't work out. Basically, like, now I feel my CV is a problem, because immediately they see, you know, so much experience in like marketing and advertising. And then they're like, we can't take you for the other stuff. So then I'm like, I feel like if I want to do it here in my home country, then the only way is to start on my own. And then I wonder if it's going to be too much for me to do everything on my own.
That sounds like hyper-independence talking a bit. Like, if I do it myself, then no one can tell me no. Mm-hmm. Although your brain is telling you no. Yeah, right? Or it's like, it's better if I don't have to involve anybody because no one else can tell me no. Or this isn't good enough. Or, but yet your brain is doing it.
Yeah. No, I think it might be also that, yeah, if I do it on my own, then maybe I don't have to say no, you know, because like, okay, I might find somebody to collaborate with, but then I actually don't like it. But, and then I have to say, sorry, it's not working out. And then I'm just making up these potential scenarios.
Right. Yeah. All these scenarios that won't work. This won't work, and this won't work, and that won't work, and this won't work.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but even if you start your own podcast, you have to get help, especially if you're successful, right? Like Kate did this alone, amazingly, for a while, but it became too much in order for her to do other things, in order to make money with, you know, being a burnout professional. She had to delegate, which means you have to talk to people, you have to work with people, collaborate with people, ask for help, you know, to do the production, you know, sponsorship if you want that, editing some, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And getting help, being okay with asking for help, being willing to be vulnerable enough to have hard conversations, or just even easy conversations about like, this is what I could, this is what I need from you. Are you able to provide that service? What are we going to do in exchange? Just like this, you do know how to do it because you're doing it right now with me here, right? You were like, I know I need help. Sarah's offering help. I'm willing to do it in exchange for being on a podcast. How convenient for you. I love that.
Yeah.
So you're practicing this thing that lights you up a little bit. Did you think of it this way? Like like there's some part of you that let it be okay to get help here in this scenario.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
For most people pleasing perfectionists, that hyper-independent, like kind of aim for or like rely on hyper-independence, could benefit from some practice in asking for help. Because the reality is we can't do life alone. We can't do it alone. We're not wired that way as humans. We're wired for belonging, for co-regulation, for I have this strength, I provide this to the community. You have that strength, you provide this to the community. And I don't have this strength, so I need your help to do this thing for me. And our modern culture is different in that, you know, we're not literally living where we're exchanging, like cooking for hunting, or, you know, cooking for washing, or washing watching the kids while this person does that thing. It's a little bit more compartmentalized than that, but it is necessary. So I can see how your, what you're considering to be failed attempts through this trial and error process has further kind of cemented this idea that, see, the things I try don't work. So I might as well just either A, do it myself, or stop trying.
Yeah.
But of course that doesn't feel good. Because you're limiting, you're like, you've put yourself in this teeny tiny box of, well, this is the only thing left that I could ever possibly do. And I have to do it on my own, and I'm burnt out, or, you know, I'm in burnout recovery. And like, can I do that on my own? Mm-hmm. Right. So you're like, I have to do it alone, but I can't do it alone. I have to do it alone, but I can't do it alone. That's the loop. Does that feel like the loop? Is that the core loop that you're in?
Yeah, for sure. In this area, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
So we have this example of you asking for help on the podcast. I know we didn't come to like it being a success yet, mm-hmm. but I'm going to call it a success because you even applied for help. Okay. But what other examples do you have in your life? Maybe not in career, but maybe mm-hmm. in career where asking for help was a success.
Hmm.
Take your time.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess in recent years, I haven't really asked much for help, except with, I guess, therapy that I'm doing.
That counts.
Yeah. Okay.
That totally counts. You're asking for help with your mental health.
Yeah.
And although you are still stuck in this way, has it been beneficial? Would you call it beneficial? There's a reason you're continuing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, for sure. For sure. It has. Yeah. It definitely has. I'm so tired of not being okay. So I would just want to snap back into, you know.
I know. Burnout recovery takes too long. Yeah. Right. And you've been mm-hmm. dealing with this for 3 years, you said. Mm-hmm. So that's a long time, right? Yeah. And research shows that burnout recovery without help, and you're getting some help, but you feel like, you know what I mean? You haven't been giving some conscious awareness and celebration to the fact that, let's say, like your therapy has been working. Yeah. So that makes you feel like you don't have help.
Yeah.
And so then burnout recovery takes 3 to 5 years if you kind of don't really get the help that you need when you need it. So you're in that territory. And that's not failure, because research is saying that's what happens. Many people go through this enough to have to say, like, data says this, mm-hmm. right? So reframe it. You're thinking of it as a failure. It's not a failure. It's just par for the course. Can you think of any other ways? Like when you moved home, did you move in with someone?
Yeah, my parents helped me a lot then to do the actual moving. So yeah, it's hardest for me to ask for help from my parents. I would say that there my hyper-independence shows the most. Yeah.
So when they helped you, were you able to feel grateful or say like, thank you with emphasis? Or did you just feel guilty and like a failure?
I felt partially grateful, but then one part of me was like, what does this mean? They helped me. And so now they might have expectations of how to reciprocate this. Mm. Yeah.
Is that how it was growing up? Transactional?
I don't even, like, when did I ask my parents for help? I was the kid, you know, who could do it on her own always.
Mm.
Yeah. Never needed help with, I don't know, studying or anything from parents, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other ways that you've gotten help during your burnout recovery process?
Friends, for sure. Yeah. Even reaching out to people when I was feeling super bad, for example. Yeah. Just, you know, like when you can't call your therapist, then you can call.
Right. So like for emotional support.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, great. So you have friends and you do ask them for help and it's beneficial. Like it's worth it.
Yes.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So you do have some examples of asking for help and receiving it and having that, because that alone is almost a trial and error. Or it's a trial. Like mm-hmm. you try on asking for help from mm-hmm. each of these people, see how it goes. Some are worthwhile, some are not.
Mm-hmm.
What's one way that you could get help or ask for help when it comes to finding a new career path in storytelling, interviewing, podcasting, radio?
I mean, I know some people in production area, so I could ask for help there, but I'm wondering if they are the right people, you know? So then, like, that's the other, I guess, side of it, where I'm like, if I ask for help and they say yes, and then we start working together, and then I realize it's actually either, I don't know, the energy is not right, or they're not doing it how I expect it, or whatever, then I have to say, sorry, I actually asked you, but actually now...
and right, but like, there you go. You have to say no. There's that fear of saying no.
And this is, that's... Wait. Yeah.
Okay. So that's where the hang up is, even more than asking for help, because it does seem like actually you're pretty good at asking for help.
Yeah.
It's the fear of you might have to say no that is really hanging you up.
Yeah.
What would happen if you called one of your production people, you gave it a whirl, or they said, hey, how about this person? And you were like, actually, that's not the route I want to take. That's not the path of, you know, radio or audio storytelling that I want to take. What would happen if you said no to that person? What are you afraid will happen?
I'm afraid of the reaction, that I will seem ungrateful and that they will think less of me because I changed my mind.
How would you treat a friend that reached out to you for some, let's say, marketing, like referrals, and turns out they didn't need it, or that's not quite the way route I wanted to go? How would you feel if your friend said that to you? Do you think you would like chastise her or feel like it was a waste of your time and feel resentful?
I like totally honestly, probably a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for your honesty. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. So if you would do that to someone else, then yeah, of course you're worried about someone doing that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. So one thing I find, I mean, this is super common with people pleasers. I mean, that's like the root fear, saying no and having someone having feeling like you either can't say no, or if you do, that you're going to be ousted right from that relationship, or, you know, evolutionarily, like the tribe that you wouldn't survive if you weren't a part of. So this is like, it touches on core survival to say no. So it makes sense that this is scary. And knowing that you can say no when it is best for you, especially doing it in a way that doesn't burn the bridge or, you know, damage the relationship, can be really helpful. So this is one thing that I often find people come to, this ability to know that their needs matter enough to risk saying no, to risk standing up for themselves and having their own back. And it happens through the process of, so what I'm realizing is like, I don't know that I can unlock this for you today, right? Like in this, but I feel like we're getting close to, you know, what the real challenge is for you, or like the crux of the matter. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Like this fear of saying no is like,
For sure.
I'll die. I'll die if I say no.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, cause it paralyzes me to do anything. Right. Cause then I just stand still and then I don't have to say no to anybody, but then I'm unsatisfied because I'm not moving anywhere.
Right. Right. So I'll just say this because I also don't know if you know about Unfried, but the process that I created with my material and experiences and all of Kate's research she so graciously did to give us all this good information, I put together this program that helps people understand where their burnout came from. So those patterns, you know, the experiences in life that got you into people-pleasing and perfectionism, hyper-independence, all of that, which often is its own enlightening moment. But then when we start paying attention to where your resentment and fear is and start saying no to things in your life that are taking too much from you or you're giving too much to, and start letting those things go or delegating them. And then you start focusing on, what do I need? And you start giving it to yourself. Sometimes that requires asking for help. A lot of times it does, if you need professional help, which you have done, right? We've just established you've been doing that successfully because you are getting better.
Yeah.
Once you kind of shift your focus inward and give yourself permission to let go and to receive in the places that you need, and you start to get buoyed up a little bit, then we start looking at safety. So we know that saying no makes you feel very unsafe.
Yeah.
Right? Internally. And you're mind beast or your lying a-hole that unfortunately you're believing, like, is harsh. And it's like, you don't want to disappoint that part of you either. Right. Or like, fail again or whatever the threat, the or else is like. So we start working on like, what's your internal, dialogue and what kind of internal boundaries do you want to have around your personal needs and what's best for you, right? Because although avoiding saying no makes you feel safe, it also keeps you stuck. So it isn't actually a self-preservation technique, right? Those things are at odds because actually you might need to say no to stay alive, even though that feels wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of counterintuitive. Yeah. So we start looking at, what kind of a relationship do you have with yourself and how can we improve it so that you know I matter and that saying no, even though it's a risk, might be the thing I need to do sometimes, even if like the risk is I get chastised. More than likely in this day and age, you're not going to get ousted from the tribe that you will die if you're not a part of, right? So that's like an old pattern and it's very real. The fear is very real. So once we kind of work on your internal relationship boundaries with yourself, which includes some self-compassion, right? Like noticing the self-judgment, checking it and being like, this is a lie. This judgment isn't true. We don't need to keep that judgment moving forward. And you start practicing some self-compassion like, hey, this has been hard. And I see that I've done a lot of trial and error and it hasn't worked, but I also see that I'm stuck in this loop and like, that's really hard. It's been very painful. As much as saying no might be painful, this is also painful. So it's different, two different kinds of discomfort.
Yeah.
Which one am I going to step towards? Which one, if I step towards it, will provide me the freedom I'm looking for out of this loop? So we start looking at external relationships, external boundaries, which is like, you and how you relate to others. And how you might want to do that in a way that protects you, right? As people pleasers, we're used to protecting everyone else with our behavior. Yeah. And it's very different to protect yourself with your behavior. And so it's a big jump, right? And it's a leap of faith at first because we're not used to doing it. We don't have any proof that it works to create safety because it feels really unsafe to do it. But it's worth practicing that. It's worth practicing that. So we do it and we do it together and you in the group, you talk about your challenges and what you're scared of and everybody relates to one another. And then everybody gets brave enough to do it all together in their own ways, in their own lives, which is great. And one of the next piece is we talk about like, what lights you up? What are your core values? What's like your inner heart compass pointing you towards, which you are very clear on. You have a relationship with your heart. Which is great, right? You said, I want to tell stories. I want to help other people tell their stories. That's fantastic. That is so human. That's also like our history was passed down in stories, right? We co-regulate, we laugh around a fire for years and years and years, decades and generations telling stories. This is so, so human. And I say this because I want you to have some compassion, right? Like it's very human to do this and that feels natural. It's also very human to like be scared of saying no, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't. Right. And so when you get clear on what you want and what your priorities are, you're able to use it, give yourself permission to use it as a guiding light, as a kind of like a safeguard, because it tells you, like, I need to protect this. This is special to me. This is what I want. And I'll do what it takes so that I can live my priority of telling stories and helping other people tell their stories. And that gives you some courage to practice saying no, maybe in the little ways first, so that you start to gain some proof that, like, saying no is not the worst case scenario. I won't get ousted. Maybe sometimes a relationship doesn't work, but, like, that's sometimes okay. It wasn't meant to work, but it doesn't mean you'll die. Mm-hmm. Right. But we need some practice doing that to start to have trust with that process. This is why it's scary. And this is why it's hard to do it on your own. Cause you're, like, essentially alone in the dark with your a-hole brain and your fear. And no one's making steps outside their comfort zone in that place. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So after I say all of that, like, the process of that, what comes up for you?
It resonates a lot. It feels like, yeah, I was thinking the whole time that you were saying it, I was like, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. So it feels definitely feels like I need some internal work first to then, yeah, go further. And because usually what has happened was that in the end, my body forced me to say no, you know?
Because, like, the fear won, sort of the terror and the fear won? No, or you're talking, like, about when you were sick?
Yeah, no, it's usually like I'm afraid to say no and I stay in situations and then I just get so bad physically that I'm like, okay, body, okay, yes, okay, I'll say no now because I'm, you know, sick again, basically.
Right. And you have decided that's the check engine light that you listen to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it has to get that bad in order for you to say no. Mm-hmm. That's the only time you can say no, is when you're, like, literally, like, face first on the floor, can't stop coughing.
Yeah. And then on the other side, that this feeds my inner critic, because, you know, then inner critic says, ha, again, you failed at saying no. So, you know, of course this happens. You deserve to feel bad because, you know, you suck at saying no. So, yeah. And right. I feel like with what you were saying, I could maybe change that. So, like, start internally with the conversations with my a-hole.
Standing up to your inner a-hole.
Yeah. Yes. Bit, right? Yeah.
Having your own back. Yeah. Having your own back against your inner a-hole. Like, no, listen. Yeah, exactly. That's not the truth 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. It's not the truth that whatever the comment is in that moment. I do know that you can change this because I've watched it. I've watched the 60-something people that have gone through Unfried in the last couple of years. I've watched them go through this process and go from not at all trusting themselves and not at all feeling like they have permission to have their own back, and to suddenly, kind of midway, two-thirds of the way through the program, they're like, guess what I did? I said no to my boss. They tried to hand me a new project, or they asked me, can you handle this? And I actually said no, because in reality, I don't have energy. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They just gave it to someone else. I didn't lose my job. They didn't beat me up internally. And I didn't have another thing on my plate. Mm-hmm. And then you go, like, oh, right. There's so much relief in just that one example. And you get a little more confidence to try it again in a different scenario, mm-hmm. in a different relationship, or maybe in the same relationship.
Mm-hmm. One question that I popped up now was, obviously there are still situations when I would be or will be unable to say no. And then, like, this harsh critic, or, like, maybe perfectionists, right? Like, goes, you know better. How? And then I think that there's where self-compassion comes in, right? Because, like, I really don't know how to be, how to be self-compassionate in a way where it's like limitless. I don't know, you know, but like when is the point, or is there a point where you say, okay, actually, like, stop, this is not cool, blah blah blah, or you, like, you know, how long
do you have to fight with your inner critic?
Yeah. How long it's okay to be not able to say no, or, you know, like, have failing at saying no.
Well, you've kind of learned already. You were face down, you know, you were coughing so much you couldn't work.
Yeah.
You can only not say no for so long, or you're stuck, or you're not making enough money, or you're, you know, just so depressed because you aren't doing something that aligns with what feeds you and fuels you. And I think this inner critic is pretty much always there. But, like, for example, for me, my relationship with that inner critic has changed because I've also cultivated my ability to have self-compassion.
Yeah.
So it's not always such a huge battle, but there are still certain things that ignite a bit of a battle because they're my own growth edge, right? They're things that I'm working on. I can't think of something right this second, but, like, it happens.
Yeah. Maybe my question would be how to stay self-compassionate even when there are, you know, the downs. That
right.
When
I think that's where it's most important.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oof. For me, self-compassion when I'm down looks like, oh my God, this has been really hard. Rather than saying, like, you're low, like going into like a beat yourself up mode. It's like, oh man, life has been really hard lately. And I'm tired. And it's understandable that I'm tired. And so I'm going to need some more rest. Okay, self, let's take a break and get some rest, because the wise part of me knows that I can't keep facing whatever's going on if I'm not rested, not fed, not taken care of. And so that's where I, like, it helps me turn, I feel low. And then I'm like, I kind of use that compassionate part of me to give myself permission to have what I need to meet my basic needs so that I can kind of get re-bolstered and rebuild my confidence again to be like, okay, let's get back at it. Whatever it is. So it's like engaging and trying and doing new things and growing, and then kind of pulling back and being like, whew, that was a lot. And maybe it was a failure or a success, but, like, either way, I need a break. I need to pay myself back for that, stepping out of my comfort zone and doing something new and big. And then, does that make sense? Does that answer the question?
I think, yeah, I'm really not good at it. Really, yeah.
Yeah. I believe you. I was awful at it. I had zero self-compassion. Zero. I did not know how to do it. I was so judgmental of myself in so many ways. And so, do you want some suggestions on what I did?
Yes, please.
I just started following, like, well, one, Paige McGee, who's been on this podcast in the past. She focuses on kind of like the nuances of boundaries for people pleasers. And they're very compassionate. Like how she helps you talk to yourself in this process of growing and learning how to have boundaries when you are a recovering people pleaser, that was huge for me. So I forever cherish her work. And also I started following Kristen Neff, who has also been on this podcast. She is like the leading researcher on self-compassion. So I start following her account. So this is like social media. So when I'm like, oh, I'm scrolling, I'm actually getting some like growth support, you know, I'm getting resource. I read these little scenarios, you know, even if it's just like one reel at a time or one post at a time, I go like, ooh, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. That is hard for me. And then I try to take it. If it really resonates, I take it with me and I try to, you know, practice it or like aim to remember to do it when I catch myself in self-judgment. I go, hold on. Could I be nicer? Could I be nicer to myself in this moment? What did Kristen say? Or what did Haley say? What can I say instead? And I just practice little bits at a time.
Okay.
Because as much as we want to just be like, I will be self-compassionate now.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You wish you could just flip the switch. It's just, that's not how change, growth, evolution happens, right? It's little doable bite-sized. That's why we always stress. Like, burnout recovery takes so long because it's slow and steady and teeny tiny things at once, you know, in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I sometimes forget about that. Yeah. It's always a constant reminder, I guess. Yeah.
It is. And that's okay. And it doesn't mean you failed. It means you're practicing. It means you're growing.
Okay.
And I think that also needs a little bit of a reframe, right? Because you're like, I tried it once. Boom. Didn't work. Fail.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And then, you know, the inner critic is like, see, I told you.
Right.
It's not working. Yeah.
Right. But how about, and this is what I was doing with like asking you to recall experiences of asking for help that were successful, because you can start to build an evidence journal, mm-hmm. which was another episode actually that was on Fried. Because I love these tools. Like our brains are wired for negativity, not for positivity. So if you want, you can literally write it down or take a note of like, what evidence do I have that asking for help is beneficial, that saying no is beneficial, or like, I didn't die when I said no. And you start building your evidence, like your proof journal of it's okay. It's okay to say no if it has my own back, if it means I have my own back.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It just feels like even if I build all this, like, I don't know, thick books of evidence, it's never enough. That's how it feels at the moment. Because, you know, this, like, it feels the other side feels so.
It does. And until you have that evidence, it will. Right. Because it's like, you know, if you have a scale, mm-hmm. you have a lot of evidence over here on the self-judgment side or the failure side or this doesn't work side. And so like you have to build up enough, right? Mm-hmm. You have to put your proof, your evidence journal on this side of the scale. And it won't be until you have enough proof for the scale to go bloop to the other side. Right. But while you're in this gray area of in between, it will feel like a battle. It's going to feel like a battle that's worth continuing until the scales tip. And then you're like, oh, one day you'll be like, see, this is worth doing. Unfortunately, that takes more time than we want it to, just like burnout recovery. It takes more time than we want it to, but it is worth doing. Okay. It is worth doing. And I'm so glad you haven't given up, even though it's been 3 years of struggle. You're here. So some, you know, that part of you does have hope, even if it's a teeny tiny bit of hope. You have some because you're here asking for help. You're still doing therapy. You know, you still have this like sparkle in your heart for telling stories and helping others tell their stories. And that's worth living for. So if you stoke those things, those get bigger.
Okay.
They will create, like, stoking them will make them kind of like a force that will have momentum. Right? Like right now, the self-judgment side has more momentum, but you can build up the mass and the momentum on this more positive, self-compassionate, heart-led, self-protective side.
Okay.
So what's one thing that you want to do? Based on this conversation today, what is your next best step? Just one. Just one.
Just one.
I know we talked about a lot of things, so that's a tough decision maybe, but which one comes forward as kind of like easy and feels like, yeah, I want to do that?
I think this final part, when you said about the scale, this really was like an aha moment in a way. And I think I just want to do small little stuff that build the other side, or like to put on the other side of the scale. And even I know I will feel like this is whatever, or, you know, even in the moments where I will feel like it's not worth doing it, I think this illustration is really now like giving me like a super solid argument to keep doing it.
Yay! Great. Yeah. I love that. I'm so glad that metaphor came forward for that visual.
Yeah.
Yes. And if, you know, you resonated with everything we talked about, so you're welcome to join Unfried. We're going to be starting in October.
Okay.
And check it out. I'll send you the information when we get it all finalized, because it sounds like something that could be really useful to you. And, and to be able to do this with a group of people that are going through it at the same time, it's, you get their momentum. To add to your momentum. And I feel like it really does help those scales tip a little faster, because it's like watching other people do it builds your confidence. That's kind of why we're doing these episodes, right? Because now someone's resonating with your story and might be like, oh my God, the scales. And like, they wouldn't have heard that before, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, so that's great. No, you're invited. Cool. And all of you listening, you're invited to Unfried if that sounds like a good thing for you right now. Okay, Kate. Another Kate. Thank you so much for telling your story. I know that's what you love to do, but it's different when it's the most vulnerable, scary part of your internal landscape. And you were brave enough to share that with us today. And I really appreciate that. I know the listeners appreciate that, because it makes it real, right? We're talking about real struggle here, and getting to a place where you know it's possible to shift, to get yourself out of burnout is really important to stoke that hope to keep you going. So,
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, I really have to say, going through this process of burnout, Unfried, the podcast, was really so important. And it helped me so many times to feel, you know, less alone in this, or just find some solutions for stuff. And yeah, so really thank you for everything you're doing, really.
You're so welcome. Thank you for listening and being willing to be receptive to what we're offering and the literal words that we're saying, right? Like, those are planting seeds in your body that are starting to sprout, right? They just need a little watering, little soil, little sun. I believe you will get all the way through your burnout recovery. So just keep going and adding little bits on that self-compassionate side of the scale.
Thank you. Thank you. I will.
You're welcome. All right, Kate, thank you. And Pride fam, thank you for being here. We'll see you next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
Fried fam, if you've been giving everything you've got to your work and are running on fumes, you're not alone. Burnout isn't a failing. It's your nervous system stuck in survival mode, and you can't sustain your energy from that place. That's why we've created Unfried, a 5-month group coaching program that helps mission-driven high achievers like yourself rebuild safety, calm their nervous system, and recover in a way that lasts. When you heal, you don't just get your energy back, you get your mission back. We've got 2 groups of 6 starting October 7th and 8th. Apply now and secure your spot at katedonovan.com/unfried.